Hey, you're listening to the Intentional Mind Podcast, and I'm your host, Ange Barnard. On this episode, we're going to be talking about a sabbatical, taking a sabbatical. And what a sabbatical is a break from work for you to pursue other interests. The reason why we're talking about this, and it's fresh in my mind, is because I recently took a sabbatical to hike the Camino de Santiago in Spain. So I was gone for 2 months hiking every single day. And I just got back and I want to share with you guys about what happened while I was out there doing my fancy sabbatical. It sounds all fancy when I say it like that, but what you don't know is that my feet were jacked up. I smelled horrible. I cried a lot and I got really sick. I got stuck in the airport for 2 days before we came home and I lost our bag. It was left in London and we ended up getting it back eventually. But anyways, it was quite an adventure, and I learned a lot about myself, despite all of the things that were challenging, because it was a lot more challenging than I thought it was going to be. Despite all of that, I learned so much that I just wanted to share with you. I also just want to use this episode to really encourage you to take a sabbatical at some point in your life, or to be thinking about what that might look like for you. So we'll go into like some more details about sabbaticals in general. And yeah, all that good stuff. But before we get on with that, I feel like I need to give you an update around life. Like, we got to catch up. I wish we could just like have a coffee or a tea together or something. Because it's been a while since I've been around. I feel like I've just been like MIA. I was looking at my calendar and I saw that in the past few months, I've been home like less than 1 week, like less than 7 days. And no wonder I've been feeling so out of it. And yeah, like, just to keep it real with you, since I've gotten back from the trip, I've just been like a little downer. I mean, even Ian's like, yeah, kind of negative. Because I don't know, I just feel like I felt so off and I was like, I just need motivation. You ever have those times where you're just like, I wish I could get motivated because I do not feel motivated. That's how I was feeling. And I was really just trying to think about, like, if I was coaching someone around this that was feeling like this, what would I ask them? You know, what would I encourage them to do? So I would ask, what are you thinking? Like, what are the thoughts in your mind? Because remember, the thoughts are what is always causing those feelings that we're having. And for me, the thoughts that I was having was like, I don't know how I'm going to catch up with everything. I was feeling like doubt around some of my dreams and goals. I was feeling like low, like who am I to encourage anyone to do anything when I feel like crap? Like, those are the stuff that was coming in my mind, the thoughts, and that was causing me to feel like crap even more. So it was good that I spent time journaling and like writing down everything that I was thinking and really looking at it and analyzing it and seeing like, is this really true? Like, you know, what is evidence to prove something else? Like, you know, and acknowledging and validating myself. Like, it makes sense that you would feel this way, given you've been barely home at all. You're really off your routine, right? And the fact that you are not generating those happy hormones that you were generating while you were hiking every day. Because when you're hiking, you're exercising a lot. You know, you get the like endorphin high is what they call it. You get all these different hormones are being released and you start to feel really good. Well, there's no way that I can replicate like what I was doing out there unless I was to go back out and hike 8+ hours a day, every single day. But that's, I'm not going to be doing that, right? So it's natural for me to feel be at a lower point, just hormonally what's happening. So anyways, I had to acknowledge and validate myself galore because I was just feeling down and I'm still working on like really getting my motivation and stuff back. But what's been really helpful to me is, so this is another question that I asked myself. So if you need this question, ask yourself this. If you've been feeling low at all, what are the things that help you feel really good? Like, when do you feel most in alignment? So I was asking myself that, and it was like, when I have that morning routine, that morning self-care time for myself, like where I'd wake up early and I'd do my journaling and I would exercise, have my coffee, work on something important to me before anyone else gets up. When I have that, I feel so good and I feel like in alignment. Like when I spend time, I feel like doing my little meditation in the morning or, you know, writing a devotional and just like spending quality time with God. Those are the things that make me feel really good. So I was like, let's go back to doing those things because I have not been doing those things. it was, I thought while I was doing my hiking adventure that I could somehow have my own little morning routine, but kind of modified when I was hiking. And I had a rude awakening because it was very different than I thought it would be. And I'm going to share with you guys that story. And another thing that happened while I was gone was we celebrated our 1 year launch of the podcast. And I wish I could have like thrown a party or even just talked about it more and just gave a shout out more to the people who have been a big part of this. Like you guys that have been leaving reviews. Thank you so much. That means so much. That's helped people find the show. So let me give a real quick shout out to Alicia, who left a review saying, I found this podcast when I decided I wanted to live more intentionally. I've listened to every single episode. What? And I have learned so much and have made so much progress into being the person that I want to be. Cheers to Alicia. Thank you so much for leaving that review. And y'all just remember that every little bit counts. Every little bit. I think sometimes we think that like, oh, what's the point of me, you know, like, it's taking 5 minutes to work on this thing that I want to work on, or 5 minutes to declutter the home, or 5 minutes to do some squats and whatever. Like, what's the point of that? All of that adds up. Every little bit counts. And remember, every action you take is a vote for who you want to become. If it's 5 minutes of you decluttering your home, picking things up, you're voting to become the organized person. If it's 5 minutes of you doing the squats, you're voting to become the fit person. If it's 5 minutes of you making a phone call that kind of scares you, you're nervous to speak to someone, you're voting to become the confident person. So I just wanted to bring that back in. Thanks, Alicia, for reminding us all of, you know, just focusing on being that person that we want to be. And if you want to leave us a review and you haven't, please do so. I know it takes time, but if you have an iPhone or some kind of Apple product, all you do is scroll down to the end of the podcast. You see the stars, you click the star that you want, and you put write a review. You actually have to write a review. It makes you do that. But just in general, I want to encourage you to write reviews for anything that you've enjoyed, because it's you basically thanking that person and putting that kind of energy out there. And like attracts. I really believe that. Like showing your gratitude and you have more things to be grateful for. It's something to really think about. I try not to leave any reviews that are really negative anywhere, because I always think about, I don't want to put that kind of energy out there. But sometimes you do want to be honest about experiences that you've had. I think in my lifetime, I've left 2 kind of negative reviews, and I've like fully explained why, because I just wanted others to be aware that this is not something that you're not going to be getting what you think you're getting. And that was like, I had to check in with myself. Like, am I doing this out of anger? Because I don't want to do it out of anger. Or am I doing this out of service? And for me, it was out of service, because I was like, I really don't want others to have that experience. And I think people need to be aware. I wish that I was aware. All right. Side note. I had mushroom ice cream recently. Mushroom ice cream. And if you don't like mushrooms, you're like, ew. But if you like mushrooms, you'd be like, what was that like? It was kind of like, it straight up tasted like mushrooms, but it also was like if you've had vanilla bean ice cream, it was like kind of like that, but with like a mushroom kind of flavor. And this is related to the reviews, because we went to this restaurant in Portugal that is known for making mushroom dishes. So Ian and I love mushrooms. So we were like really curious, and I really wanted rice. That was one of the number one things I missed the most when I was hiking, was eating rice. So I was thinking, I'm gonna get mushrooms, I'm gonna get some rice, it's gonna be wonderful. Well, I ordered this dish and it came with rice. It came out, it had this tiny bowl of rice that was, okay, so the bowl was probably like the size of like my normal big coffee mug, and it was not even a quarter full of rice. And I was so sad, because I was like, come on, man, you can just get me some rice. It's pretty cheap, right? So I was disappointed, though, because when I looked at the reviews, no one talked about the fact that, one, it was one of the most expensive meals I've had, and I left super hungry, and so did Ian. We actually had a laugh about it, because Ian got like one scoop of like this, I don't know, rice looking dish, but it was literally like one, like a big fat soup spoon. It was a scoop of a big fat soup spoon, and that was it. And we left, and it was probably like, I don't even want to tell you guys how much we paid for that. I'm not even going to mention it, because it still makes me cringe. Anywho, So it would be nice to have that. And I'm the kind of person who, when I leave a review, it's like super detailed. And the reason why I told you the mushroom story is because I wish somebody would have said, hey, if you go here, expect to leave hungry because they don't give you very big portions. That would have been really helpful to know, you know? But on another note, you should leave reviews that are detailed and good. Like when there's good things that, like, I always wonder when people don't tell me that, like, why didn't anyone mention these amazing muffins that they leave for you in the reviews? Why didn't anyone mention the location of this place? Like, this is amazing, you know? Like, so anyways. All right, I'll stop talking about reviews now. Sorry about that. Back to sabbaticals. That's what we're here for, Ange. Sabbaticals. All right, sabbaticals. So a sabbatical is a break from work for you to pursue other interests, right? This is the definition that we're talking about here. So what kind of other interests do people often pursue? You may have heard this. I remember hearing when I was in college that one of the professors was taking a sabbatical to do some research. So I always just associated like sabbaticals with like fancy things like research or stuff like that. Someone's working on their book. And those are legit reasons for taking a sabbatical. But really, again, it's any break from work for you to pursue other interests. So you could be taking a sabbatical for you to learn something new. Like my husband Ian wants to take a sabbatical for him to learn Spanish more so he can speak more fluently than he does now. So he wants to be fully immersed in a place. So that might be a reason for a sabbatical. Maybe learn something else you want to learn. Travel to spend time, like quality time with a loved one. Maybe you feel like you've been lacking that and you want to prioritize that more. That might be a reason to take a sabbatical or to do like a long hike like I've done or many others have done, like doing the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, or, you know, the Camino de Santiago, that kind of stuff. So you're really just taking yourself out of the environment that you're used to, can shake things up a bit. So here are three reasons why you should take a sabbatical. Speaking of shaking things up, is to do some identity work. Oftentimes people take a sabbatical when they feel burnt out. I don't think that you need to feel burnt out to take one, but or maybe they feel like they want to reevaluate their life, or they realize like, you know, I don't know if I really want to keep doing this, or maybe I just want a break. So it's to do some identity work. Like, an example is when I was hiking, I kept asking people, like, why are you doing this hike? Why are you doing the Camino de Santiago? And I want to say like 95% of the people that I had talked to said something around finding themselves. Like, I just want to find myself. I want to figure out what I want to do next. And that's why they were taking that sabbatical. And it makes perfect sense when we go back to how the mind works, like we're always talking about. So there's lots of, in our current environment, there's a lot of triggers, like things that we're seeing that trigger us into certain actions that we take. And we've developed these habits, whether we're conscious of it or whether it's just subconscious things in that environment. Our ways of thinking, all those patterns, like all of that stuff is continuing to run. But when you switch your environment, now you can look at things from a new perspective. And it's almost like you're the observer looking in. And then you can evaluate it from that perspective versus being in it. Sometimes when you're in it, it's so hard to see like how it really is because you're stuck in it. It's like there's blinders on. I often think about this as like when someone's in like a crappy relationship, they're like, don't realize how awful it is until like they're out of it. And they're like, whoa, that was messed up. Right now they can see it very differently and they can make a different judgment because they're seeing it from a different lens. So if you need to do some identity work, you want some more clarity around something, that might be a good reason for you to take a sabbatical, take yourself out of that. If you want to develop new habits, one of the best things that you can do is to take yourself out of the environment that you're in, because then you're not triggered by certain things that are in there already. It's also a way to, like, even if you've had good habits in the environment that you're in and you move into a different environment, all those good habits might go out the window. Like, it's happened for me when I switched environments. But you might very intentionally do that because you don't like the habits that you have. Okay, so number one, identity work. The second reason is to improve your longevity and your well-being in general. So there was a famous study done with Harvard. It was the study, I forgot what it was called, something Grant study, where they studied men over the span of 75 years. So So it was a very long study that was done. And they were looking at basically what plays a role in longevity and well-being. And one of the top things that they found was having quality relationships. Having quality relationships helped people live longer and better in general. Their well-being was better. They're more satisfied, like all of that stuff, right? With their life in general because of the quality of the relationships. So sometimes someone might take a sabbatical because they want to improve a relationship. Like I know this guy who had taken a sabbatical so that he could take his mom on a trip and spend quality time with her. Or maybe you want to do it with a significant other. Like Ian and I feel like it's improves our relationships. Like recently, the sabbatical, like I really do feel like overall it improved our relationship. Relying on each other during those challenges, all that good stuff. And the third reason is to gain confidence in general and improve your ability to tackle risk. Because if you're doing the same old thing every day, like you don't get as well, maybe you're not taking advantage of opportunities to really challenge yourself. And then you might be lacking confidence in your ability to do something different. But if you actually intentionally do something different and you accomplish your goal, then you're more confident. You're like, I can do this. You start to believe yourself, like in your mind, you're thinking like, I can do maybe the hard things. If I can do this, man, what else could I do? And you bring that mindset back with you when you go back to work or whatever it is that you do next, because now you have a greater belief in yourself and your abilities. So you're more likely to take risks. I've heard this a lot, or I've seen this when I've been reading books about the Appalachian Trail and hiking it. So many people have said when they have through hiked, like after it, they felt like they could do anything because they went through such hard times and they overcame those hard times. Now they feel so confident and like, you know, making a call to someone that they felt uncomfortable felt like nothing. Like in the past, maybe they're uncomfortable. Now they're like, whatever. I was like starving in the woods, dehydrated. Like I can handle this. I can handle this call. Right. So not that you need to take it to that level, but even just any small thing that you've learned while you're on a sabbatical can really improve your confidence in general. And change your thinking and you bring that back with you is what I'm trying to say. All right. So I want to talk with you about the Camino de Santiago and just shine a light on what it is, because I didn't really know much about this hike. And after doing it, I was like, I feel like so many people could have this adventure and it could work out for so many people of so many different athletic abilities, people of so many different ages, from your kids to someone in their 70s, like you could do a Camino. You could do it in some way. So a Camino is, I know I've mentioned this on the show, but not in this detail. So a Camino de Santiago is known as a hike, basically a pilgrimage is what it's referred to, that people have taken for thousands of years. And the whole point is to end up in Santiago, Spain. And in Santiago, it is believed that the remains of the Apostle Saint James, his remains of his body is there. So a lot of Christians take on this pilgrimage for religious purposes, but a lot of people just do it in general, just for the adventure, to find themselves, as we had talked about before. So anyways, there's 7 main routes and they all lead to Santiago. Some start, like one starts in Portugal, one starts in France, one starts in England, and I forget where all the other ones are, but they all lead to Santiago. So we did the northern route. So it started in Irun, Spain, which is on the border of France. And it went all along basically the coastline. It was inland too, but it went around the coastline. And then we actually, partway through, we hopped off of that route and we took the Primitivo route, which is known as one of the more challenging routes. And we took that to Santiago. And it was all through the mountains and it was pretty hilly. So anyways, that's the route that we did. And we started September 7th and we ended on October 15th. So that's how long it took us to complete all of it. We hiked over 700 miles total when it was all said and done, because we ended up adding a few more days after we hit Santiago because we wanted to go to Finisterre. So Finisterre has been known as the end of the world because it was the area back in the day where they thought the world had ended, because it's the westernmost point of Europe, or one of them, and they believed that there wasn't anything else beyond the ocean beyond that. So we're like, you know, we want to hike to the end of the world. So that's what we ended up doing. So we went an additional 75 miles or so after Santiago, something like that. So total 700 miles of hiking, the most I've ever done in my life. If you're not familiar with miles, in kilometers, it's 1,127-ish kilometers total. So, man, like, I don't even know how to, like, sum it up so everyone can get this. But when you hike that much, maybe you – and while hiking, we carried our hiking bags. So we hiked with them the entire way. And total, we had about 25 pounds, and then sometimes more, because we had food and water. That didn't include the food and water. So that would be about – is it like 11 kilograms or something like that. And after a while, that is hard to carry around. I get it now why long distance hikers say that you really want to keep your pack light. And I've done, you know, other through hikes that were like a week long or so, and I carried and hiked with my pack the entire time. But it's very different when you're going for a longer time, because it takes a huge toll on your body, and it can be very difficult. Just having the pack off you can feel like such a relief, especially with your knees and all of that and the hills that you're dealing with. So what was really cool about the Camino is that it's really set up for these hikes. Like all the towns get that people are doing this. So along the way, there's these yellow arrows that you follow. It's celebrated. People will ride by you in their bikes or drive by you or walk by you, and they yell Buen Camino, which basically means like, enjoy the journey, have a good hike, or it's just like this positive greeting to you as you're hiking. So I love that it's celebrated everywhere you are, the hike is, and people admire you for doing it. So often people were like, I admire you for taking that on, for going that far. And obviously there's movies about it and things like that. But it was so shocking to me that you could hike to so many different towns, and it was so accessible. And as you went from town to town, you could stay in different albergues. The albergues are also known as like a hostel. So an area that you can stay in that has like dorms. And in some of the private albergues, you can get a private room. So like a hotel, or you can stay in a private hotel if you wanted. And I loved that, like, yeah, you could do a long day of hiking, but you always end up somewhere like civilized that you could stay, right? You weren't some people were camping though along the way, and honestly I wish that we would have brought a tent, because it would have reduced a lot of stress that we had, because we didn't have a cell phone that worked while we were traveling. So it made it really difficult, because we couldn't search anything online, we couldn't call anyone, and some of the places were booked up in advance. There was one day that we were actually stranded where we didn't have anywhere to stay, and thankfully somebody offered to let us stay in their apartment that we had, someone else knew, when we were like stuck in this other building asking if we can use the phone. They called someone and they let us stay in their apartment. It was a lot more challenging for us because we didn't have the communication. But if we would have had our cell phones and we could look things up and we could call ahead, because a lot of people will reserve their stay along the way. So they will reserve 1 month of stays, because you don't have to. The Camino itself takes about, if you did like the northern route, you could do it in about like less than a month or so. You could do it in about, I think it's like 30 to 37 days. And it depends if you like lay over at, you know, different places that you might really like along the way. So we were gone for 2 months, but we didn't hike the entire 2 months, because the last part of it, the last week or so, we ended up going to Portugal. But anyways, the other thing I love is that while you're hiking, let's say that you get hurt or maybe you just want to like skip one area for whatever reason, you can, it's easy to have a taxi come get you. They actually have taxis that are specifically for pilgrims. That's what you're called when you're doing this hike. You're called a pilgrim. And they have taxis that can pick you up in different areas and bring you to the next town. You can even to have your bag shipped to the next location for you. There's a car or vehicle that comes and picks up the bags at each location that people stay and brings them to their next location. So you don't even have to hike with your bag. You don't even have to carry it, and it can make the hike so much more easier. Some people would take buses from one portion to the next. So you can do it in any way that feels right to you. But I saw such a variety of people. People from like 70s, you know, in their upper 70s, to people that were, I think, 18 years old. We met a couple that said they did the French route with their children under the age of 6. So it can be done in so many different ways. And you don't have to do a full month. You could come on the trail and do just a week. But it's so cool that you can hike from one town to the next. And the towns, like the history behind them, the beautiful like Roman walls and like the cobblestone roads. And you hike from, you know, you're on the cliffs of the along the ocean to like beautiful forests to farm on the sides of like beautiful farmlands. It was just so cool how the terrain changed and each town was different and we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into along the way, like what we'd come into next, and for good or bad reasons, you know. But it was nice that you had this element of surprise and I didn't know what things were going to look like. So we stayed at the albergues along the way. So albergues are basically like hostels, like dormitories that you can stay in. And for pilgrims, those that are doing the hike, if you show your pass, because you have this like passport and you get it stamped at each place that you stay along the way, you can also have restaurants stamp it. If you show that, then you can stay at these places for cheaper. So it can be like €5 to stay at these places. That was like the lowest that we paid. And then you sometimes can get like, you know, a pretty nice stay for like €38. That was one of my favorite places that we stayed, was €38. And the cost of it, what I loved is that when we did this trip, we looked at what we were spending and realized that we could comfortably have all the food that we wanted to eat and stay in a fairly nice place for under $35 a day per person. That's including your food and your stay. So it can be done very affordably. I just love that it was so accessible to so many people and you didn't have to commit to doing the whole thing. You could do like some people were just doing a weekend, but they're going from one town to the next and they're even having their bags shuttled. And it's just cool that it was so accessible. So anyways, that's really what the Camino was about. You'd have to do research on it. If you have any questions, let me know. I just thought that was really cool how it was set up, and I'm really excited because I want to go back and do the Portuguese route. And then at some point do the French route. The Camino Francés. That one is the most popular route. It's also very, very busy at times. But we did the northern route to, again, to Primitivo and then to Santiago. And those are the more challenging routes. There's a lot more hills to them. So that's what I hear. And I found it to be true. It was very, very hilly. Okay, so I wrote down some things that I wanted to share with you, wisdom that I got. So the first bit of wisdom I got was that wanting something isn't enough. You have to take strategic moves and be willing to surrender your timeline. So along the way, there was other people who wanted to do this hike. They wanted to finish it, but they were not strategic about how they went about it. Like they would push themselves very hard and they would do very long days, and a lot of them ended up injured and couldn't finish it. So they weren't listening to their body. They weren't taking strategic moves. They were just trying to get it done. So wanting it isn't enough. You have to be strategic about it. And that's with anything that we do in life, right? Related to any goal that you have. So think about this too, is like focusing on what's most important. So during the hike, what is most important is that you're healthy. That is what's most important. That should take priority over anything else, is that you are your health is good so you can continue on. And so that if you need a surrender your agenda or your timeline for you to get healthier, that's what you need to do, right? This reminded me of James Clear's quote where he says winners and losers have the same goals. Winners and losers have the same goals. In other words, they want the same thing, but wanting it isn't enough. You actually have to show up and be the person that achieves those goals. And often that includes being strategic about how you go about it and really remembering that you're in it for the long haul. You're not in it for just like this small moment. You're not just trying to check a box. You're in it for the long haul. And that takes time to see the results. And it takes time to achieve the goal. And you're really thinking about you being in it for the long haul. So I thought about this with this long distance hike is like, I need to take care of my body because I need this body to help me get through. I'm not just trying to check a box. I'm trying to enjoy this journey. So going back to with your real reason why you're doing something, I think about this a lot with my business around like the real reason why I do what I do is because I really want to help people intentionally design their lives, design a life that they're really proud of and to believe for more, to see that there is more out there that's possible for them. And sometimes in my work, it can get really hard and I can feel really defeated with things that I'm learning or just, you know, just things that happen. And then I remind myself, like, why am I really doing this? And when I go back to that, it's like, well, am I feeling that joy now from helping people? Like, is it still here? Like, am I still on the journey? And the answer is yes. And I think about that with the trail. It's like, you're still on the journey. We don't need to like rush this and hurt ourselves through it and make it be crappy and just suck. We can make ourselves still enjoy the journey and still be achieving our real goal, like why we really even want to do this in the first place. All right, so the next note I have down is to be intentional but unattached. You've heard me say this before. I'm intentional but unattached. It's a mantra of mine. So I think it's important to create a timeline for what it is that you want to create, right? But don't be attached to that. Don't be attached to something looking and being a certain way, but it's important to be intentional, but be open to the flow. Because I found myself like during the hike, like, you know, I didn't plan to spend 2 days in one area, but I needed to give myself a break because my knee was really bothering me. So we ended up staying 2 nights in one location and shortening the hike for that day. And that was hard for me because I had a timeline that I wanted to make. And I had to really think about being unattached to that timeline and surrendering and being open to what was flowing my way. Like there was an opportunity to stay somewhere that was cheaper, that was a great place for me to rest in a good town. So I took advantage of that opportunity. But if I was so stuck on that timeline, I think I would have pushed myself harder and maybe even hurt myself through the process. So think about that with your other goals. Like I'm intentional, but I'm unattached. I'm going to still plan. I'm going to still put myself out there. Even when it comes to what your plan is for the day, you're still going to create a plan. It may not work out exactly as you want, but you're not going to be attached. You're not going to get down if it doesn't like work out exactly the way that you want. Cause you know, in the end, this is interesting how this comes full circle, but I was listening to Tyler Perry the other day and he was talking about how failure, he's talking about failure. And he said, he was asked in an interview, tell me about the times that you failed. And he was like, I don't really think about the times that I've failed because I know that all things work together for good, for my good, right? And I think about that where it's like, yeah, you should be intentional. But if something gets messed up along the way, know that it's working together for your good. It's working for your good. And that's where our faith comes in. I love believing that and thinking that. And it worked out well because you know what's so interesting? Like our timeline kind of got messed up, but we still ended up and finishing our trip exactly at the time that we thought we would, despite moving things around. And it worked out the way I think it was truly supposed to work out. Cause there was other things like cool experiences we had along the way. Like for example, if we would have been a day ahead, we would have been hiking in the pouring rain up the really high mountains where they say, don't go up there if it's pouring rain, if we were one day ahead. So because we had the day set back, it was a set up in the sense. So just trusting that everything is always working out for you. But yeah, God still wants you to be intentional, still wants you to make your desires known. I really believe that. Okay, so the next thing is, when there's nothing you can do, shift your focus inward and ask, what would make me proud of how I showed up? And pray. You ever find yourself in those moments where you're like, what am I gonna even do? Like, there's nothing I can do. And you feel like so out of control. There's nothing you can do to make it better. There's nothing you can do to fix the situation. Then shift your focus inward. Shift inward and say, what can I do right now to make me proud of how I showed up? Like handling this with kindness and grace, that would make me proud of how I showed up. Praying and asking God, like, hey, I don't know what to do in this situation. Can you help me? So that showed up for me during the hike several times. I'm going to share a story with you guys in a bit about like the scariest time for me on the hike, the scariest day of my life, really, and where there was a lot of prayer involved. But another one was when we didn't have a place to stay. One of the nights when everything was booked, I'm like, what the heck are we going to do? And I don't mind sleeping in a tent, but we didn't have a tent with us because how the Camino works is you stay, you know, in the albergues along the way. We didn't bring a tent with us. Some people do actually bring tents, but we didn't realize that was a thing. And I think it can actually kind of be challenging to find places along the way. But anyways, so when we didn't have a place to stay, I remember just sitting there and being like, okay, what makes me proud is if I remain calm, if I trust that everything is working out for us. And I'm like, God, please help us. And then an opportunity opened up for us. When we had our flight issues, there were so much issues coming back home. We were stuck in the airport for 2 days. We didn't have internet and we needed to do like this code thing and none of the internets were working. We were in this long line. They were going to send us to the very back of the line. We would have missed another flight. And it was awesome because there was like these guys from India that were in front of us and they let us use their hotspot. And that was like, I remember praying like, God help us. I don't know what to do in this situation. And then these guys were like, hey, you want to use our hotspot? I was like, what? I mean, that was so helpful. When I was super sick, there was a day, 3 days when we were hiking, I had like flu-like symptoms. It was rough. You ever like been like, it's hard for you to like have the energy to walk to the bathroom? That's how I was feeling. And I had a 20-mile hike to do. Of course, there wasn't anything that I feel like I could actually do to feel better, but I shifted my focus inward and I prayed and was like, help me, God, like help me just get through this day. And I did. And it was nice because I actually felt like Ian is like such an amazing husband. He was carrying my bags. Like, so he was carrying like 2 bags and you could tell it really bothered him that I was so sick. And like, it was to see him like care for me and carry those things and really like think about me in that way. Like, that's how he is in general. But it really like reminded me of like my love for him and our love for each other. So anyways, all things work together for your good, right? The next wisdom bit is living a life true to you requires so much self-reflection and so much courage. It really does. Because even like people that we love that have the best of intentions, like we don't want to necessarily disappoint them, but we may want something different for ourselves or for our life. So for example, like I was talking to Ian about the Appalachian Trail and like I do want to hike the Appalachian Trail, but I'm not so sure, I'm not 100% sold that I want to be gone for 6 months hiking it because there's so many of my other dreams I also want to make a reality. And right now in my mind, I'm like struggling with figuring out how that would work out. Like I don't know. So I'm not 100% sold on it yet. I'm still praying about it, thinking about it. But anyways, I talked to Ian about this and I was afraid to mention this to him because this is a big dream of his. And I told him, I said, you know, after reading all the books, like I'm struggling with my strong why behind it. And I want to make sure I'm living like true to myself. Like, I mean, I always am going to support you in your dreams, but I want to make sure if I do something that is because I want to do it too. Like, you know, and I know there's like compromises in marriage and stuff like that, but this is like a whole different thing. Committing 6 months to go living in the woods is a whole different thing. So I mentioned it to Ian and he was so supportive and loving about it and was like, yeah, I get this. Like, this is more of my dream than it is yours. Like, I totally get that. So you think about what it is that you want to do. And if you feel like you want to honor another of your dream more, like I 100% support you on that. And I said, well, I 100% support you in doing your hike. And if I come out and I do big portions of it with you, but not the full entire thing, like, we can still have our cake and eat it too. It's like how he kind of described it. You can still hike and you can still work on your other stuff. And I felt so loved and supported that he was willing to listen to that, like my truth. And I feel like just the point that when, if you want to live a life true to you, it does require so much of you really thinking, like the self-reflection, like what do I really want? And putting yourself in different uncomfortable situations to get some reflection. And then also having the courage to say it. And sometimes that requires saying it to a boss even, you know, saying it to a friend. I love when I have friends that are keep it real with me. Like, let's say I ask them to do something and instead of making up some stupid excuse of why they can't, they straight up tell me, no, they don't want to because they don't like that. They don't feel like it. I'm like, I love that that's how you show up in the world, that you just be your true self, because that takes courage. Because so many of us don't even have the courage to do that. Like when we don't really want to do something, we'll make up a lie about why we can't show up to the event. When really we just straight up don't want to show up to the event, right? Because it takes courage to speak our truth, to live a life true to us. So that's another thing that just hit me again is like, I want to be living a life more authentic to me and speaking my truth instead of making up BS excuses for things, you know? Okay, so the next thing, bit of wisdom I got was that the truest measure of success is enjoying the journey. That's the truest measure of success. Did you enjoy the journey? So surrender the ego BS, where we are like thinking like our measure of success is to check the box, do this thing. Like even with the Camino, like I said, there's some people that are like rushing to finish the thing just to check the box that they did it. But that's your measure of success, because really your measure of success is, did you enjoy the journey? I'd rather be the person that stopped and took a bunch of pictures, stopped at all the little restaurants along the way and just enjoyed the journey versus the person that like rushed through it and got done in a quick amount of time, like the fastest time. Like, you know, who cares? Like the whole point is, did I enjoy the journey? So think about that in your life in general. Like, are you just trying to check a box or are you truly enjoying the journey? Because remember, that is the measure of success, is enjoying the journey. Originally, we started the hike just hiking really quickly, and it felt like we were just trying to check the box, and it was not fun. I was starting to get hurt, all of that stuff. But then when we slowed down and I reminded myself what the truest measure of success was, enjoying that journey, it was so much more enjoyable, because we just like, I surrendered that ego crap about getting through it fast and all that stuff, and was just like there and present. All right, so two more things. The second bit of wisdom is, it's the little things that really matter the most. That you don't need a lot to make you happy. You don't need a ton of clothes, a ton of things. Some of the things on the trail that made me the most happy were simple things, like when someone offered me a warm drink and I was cold. A blanket, like the places that we stayed that actually gave me a blanket. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like heaven, this cozy blanket. Watching the sunrise and just even feeling well. Because, you know, I was sick for several days. Like, when I felt well and energized, it was like, it was such a gift to feel that way. So remember, it really is the little things. And we need to, like, cherish those even more. When you do things like long-distance hiking or just hiking in general, and you're without your luxuries of, you know, being able to go to the bath, like, actually have a toilet or have toilet paper, or a blanket, or be able to eat whatever you want, like, or drink whatever you want. Like, when you're without that stuff, without a shower, all the things, you're reminded, like, how special those little things are. Like, having a spoon. I remember how grateful I was one day when I had a plastic spoon that I could use. So grateful for that. So grateful for a napkin when I was eating. So grateful that it was, like, a day that I could, like, sit there and my hands weren't freezing. Like, just like these little things in life, like sometimes you need to be taken out of your current environment to realize how good we really have it. That's the one thing I love about long distance hiking, because it reminds me of like, you got it real good. And when you come back out of the woods or something, you realize that it makes you more of a grateful person. Okay. And the seventh thing I learned was that most people aren't willing to take the risk to fail. If you're not failing, you're not playing big enough. This was a huge aha moment for me. It was because I was listening to another podcast while I was hiking. And I thought about this because it was James Wedmore. And he was saying how the reason why he's as successful as he is, as like an entrepreneur making multi-millions of dollars a year and just doing work that makes him fulfilled and like genuinely loving his work, was he said is that he is just willing to fail more than other people are. Like, he's just like, I just see it as like, hey, like, that's part of life. Like, if I'm trying actually to do things that push me so far out of my comfort zone that I may fail at them. And that's okay, because it means I'm playing big. I'm playing big in this world. And I was thinking about that with myself, like, how often I don't even put myself stuff out there because I'm afraid to fail at something. And it's just like, we're all going to die. Like, I mean, we all just need to realize that we are all going to die. Not to be super morbid, but we are. Like, none of that even matters. Like, a lot of the stuff we're worried about, what people are going to think about us if we do something, it's like, that doesn't even really matter. We're all going to freaking die. So it's like, why not play big? Why not take bigger risk? And maybe we'll fail along the way, but we get the opportunity to achieve more because and do things that we really love because we are willing to risk that. And those that we admire, they were willing to take the risk to fail. That's how they got to the places that they are doing the things that we admire, is because they're willing to risk failing more. So basically he was saying in a nutshell, I'm just willing to fail more than other people are. And I don't know, I thought that was just like aha, like an aha moment for me. And I thought about like, you need to do some more things that might fail. You need to play a little, you need to get into the arena with some of the people that are much better at you at something so that you're willing to fail more. Because then you're also going to achieve more. And I don't mean that from an achievement, like check the box thing more, but truly feel more fulfilled, I really think. Okay, so that's all the lessons that I really got from hiking the Camino. I do want to share with you a fun story before we end. Okay, so this was from a journal entry. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it was crazy long because I was kind of blogging about my experience on my Facebook. And I would go into excessive detail about what happened during the day. And this post was like basically summed up with like scariest day of my life, like horrid looking feet, scariest day of my life, and nuns was how I kind of summarized this. So I'm going to start in between the post so you can get an idea of what it was like when I was hiking the Camino and the scariest day of my life. So it says, we began walking along the coast. In one area, we approached a bunch of goats with bells around their necks, and it sounded so magical. There was a beautiful ocean view near the goats. We stopped to listen to the sound of their bells. Shortly after, it started sprinkling. We got our ponchos out and assumed it was going to downpour, but it didn't. Then we ran into Sabrina, our Canadian friend, who had allowed us to use her phone several times. We chatted with her as we stopped to take pictures near another beautiful area. We walked with Sabrina for quite a while and all agreed we'd take the shorter, in quotation marks, more scenic route to Loreto that goes along the coast. After walking for a while, we came to a beautiful beach area and decided to sit down for lunch under a little tree on the beach, the only tree we saw. I was hiking in my sandals and was getting sand all over my bandages. We had a good lunch under the tree, eating a pasta salad mixture we bought at the grocery store and some chocolate wafer cookies. After eating, we headed up some stairs along the coast that took us to a sandy path up the side of a mountain. I forgot to mention that my bandages was because I had a horrible, huge blister in between my big toe and my second toe, like in my toe mound. So we bandaged it up and then I was walking in sandals. So I was getting all the sand in them because I just wanted to take a break from my shoes. So anyways, so the path started up a little incline. We followed a group of German guys who were playing a techno music from a little radio and chanting, "We're going to Americas," over and over. We laughed and said, "Let's follow these guys. Apparently they know where they're going." We assumed they were headed to the beach based on how they were dressed. So they weren't hikers. They're just some guys, German guys going to the beach with a boombox. As we kept walking, we realized the path was getting even more rocky and sandy. So we stopped to switch my shoes out and put on my trail runners. We told Sabrina to continue hiking and we'd catch up to her. She said her ankle was bothering her and she'd be slow anyway, so we would see her soon. As we hiked up, we realized the views from the side of the mountain were majestic, unlike anything we've seen. We stopped to take pictures and video along the way. I was getting a little nervous about the exposure of the trail near the cliffs, but assumed that scary part of the trail would end soon if we just kept following the arrows. I figured it must be fine considering the German guides ahead of us were going up and over it too. Turns out, it got even scarier than I could imagine. At one point in time, we heard a guy scream, and the sound of his scream fade as if he had fallen. We didn't know what happened. The path had shortened to the point we were practically on the edge of the cliff. It required us to rock climb up. We were literally crawling on our knees with our heavy packs on our back as the wind blew excessively. We had to climb up the mountain for what felt like forever, finding places for our feet to push off and rocks to grab. The movie Free Solo flashed in my mind, except instead of being a pro, I thought, what the F am I doing? Lord, please don't kill me by one of my greatest fears, falling off a cliff. This was extremely hard as the weight of our packs were pulling us back. We were trying to climb and hold our hiking sticks at the same time. I've never been so scared in my life. I wanted to just stop and cry, but knew that wouldn't help at all, and the only way out of this was just to keep going. It felt more dangerous to turn back now that the wind was picking up. The ground was unstable and our packs were weighing us down. We were at least 1,000 feet up. And it was so steep. I wondered how Sabrina had hiked as far as she did because I saw that she had reached the top, or so I thought. As I was climbing, Ian grabbed my poles and was telling me which way to go because I didn't want to look up for fear it would pull me back off the mountain. So I kept my eyes on my hands that were covered in mud and watched them slip as I grabbed rocks to pull me up. My knees were also muddy and I felt like I was shaky, yet so focused on just surviving. I could tell Ian was really worried. We reached an area that I thought was the top in a road. I took a sigh of relief. I pulled myself up one last time and started walking on this fairly flat, rocky area following these black arrows that were clearly not the Camino de Santiago arrows, which are yellow, but a route of some sort. We talked about how scary what we had just experienced was and wondered which way Sabrina had gone since we didn't see her anywhere. Then we realized the arrows led to another cliff area that was a straight drop down. There was a cable attached to the edge of the mountain and an area barely wide enough for both of your feet to be side by side to cross around the cliff. Ian dropped his bag and yelled, "Stay back, Ange. Sit down where you are now. Don't move. This is really dangerous. I'm going to see if this is the only way down." I said, "Okay," and walked two steps forward, and Ian screamed again, "Stop moving now." So I said, okay, I'll stay here." He walked over to the cable and came back and said, "Okay, it's not too bad. We can do it. Just be super careful and hold on to the cable." I walked over and didn't even look down. When I saw the cable, I was shocked. That's what we had to do to go over to the other side. I just walked step by step around the cliff in between two big rocky areas. I just kept telling myself, imagine I'm just crossing a sidewalk. We made it over all with all the items and took another sigh of relief. I said, "Now what? Is there a way down?" Ian said, "There has to be. I'm so proud of you. I didn't want to tell you how bad that really was because I didn't want you to freak out, but that was quite the drop and pretty sketchy." I said, "Yeah, I'm glad you didn't express that to me." As we walked more, I got nervous as I didn't see a way down the mountain. Then we looked down and saw a guy climbing up the mountain. He came over to us and Ian asked him if the way down was okay to go. He spoke very little English, but said, "No problemo." I didn't even see how he even came up. It looked as if there was no way down, but somehow he made it up, so it gave me hope. Ian said to follow him, so I did, and he climbed down and told me to take my pack off and poles and hand it to him and climb down to one area, and I said I can do it with my pack. I stepped down with the pack on, and we continued to scramble until we got down the mountain about 3 hours later. While traveling down, we passed through so many rocky areas and then an area filled with picker bushes and narrow paths filled with slugs. Once we reached a flatter area, we both peed. And Ian asked to look at my blisters. I didn't want him to because I knew it got worse. I sat on the ground and we saw my blister between my big toe and on the front foot pad had gotten so huge, the biggest blister I've ever seen on me or anyone else. He rinsed both my sandy covered feet with a little bit of water we had left and poured hand sanitizer on my blisters and then covered them with the Campeed Band-Aid and tape. Then we continued the journey on even further down, as we still weren't fully down the mountain, as we had thought. When we had reached the bottom, we saw a guy and his dog leading a group of sheep. We eventually reached a road that declined to the outskirts of the city of Loreto, with a view of the ocean. By this time, it was about 6:30 p.m., and we were hoping to get to the monastery by 8 p.m. We had a couple miles left to walk to the road. We passed a red dahlia farm and saw some fig trees. Ian picked us some figs and we ate them. Eventually, we reached a huge Catholic church. We climbed up the old stairs to see about six other hikers sitting on the benches outside as if they had been waiting a while. A church service was going on. We looked at them and one girl said, "You have to wait about 30 more minutes." We sat on the bench, started eating my chocolate wafers and stretching. Ian went over to another heavy church door and read a sign that said, "Pilgrims check in at 7:45 to 9:30 and do not ring the bell before then." So we sat on the bench and waited. We saw the young German couple who we had walked with the day before walking down the road with bags of groceries. They sat across the sidewalk and ate some snacks. Soon after, more hikers arrived and waited too. Then the door swung open and two nuns dressed in nun attire told everyone to come in. They sat behind a glass wall area and asked for normal passports and pilgrim passports. They didn't seem to speak English. They checked us in and stamped our passports. They told Ian in Spanish they would have to separate us since girls had to be with girls, and he said it was fine. Then another lady who spoke English and seemed to be a part of the church came in and started giving directions. She said, you have to get dinner on your own or you can cook in the kitchen until 10. Breakfast is served 7 to 7:30 a.m. upstairs and the door is locked tonight at 10:30, so you must be inside with the lights off at that time. The nun had us and another female couple follow her down a hallway. She told us to leave our shoes in the hallway and hiking sticks in a bin. Then showed us our beds, the kitchen and bathrooms. I was in a room near the bathroom and kitchen with a female couple. My bed was separate and they had a bunk bed. Ian was in a bunk at the corner of the huge open dining area where a bunch of mostly German hikers were enjoying a pasta meal together they had just cooked in the kitchen. We sat our stuff down and Ian gave me the items I needed from his pack for the night, like my sleeping liner and toiletries, and then asked if we should go get dinner. I said yes, and right after Sabrina yelled, "Hey guys!" She looked exhausted and was standing on the cobblestone road looking into the room we were in. We said, "Did you just get here?" And she said, "Yes, it's a long story. You have no idea what I've been through." We said, "We were just so happy to see you. We were so worried." She said, "I'm happy to see you guys too. How do I check in?" We said, "Upstairs. There's so many people here. Go check in and let's get dinner." She said, "Sounds good. I'm starving and I need a beer. I'll tell you about everything at dinner." We went to get our poncho since it started raining. We met Sabrina on the road after she checked in and walked to find a place to eat. She said she had just texted Tim, the German guy she had been traveling with, and he was getting groceries so they could make something to eat in the kitchen, but we could get a beer before and some snacks. As it rained, we found a bar and ordered potatoes with sauces, chicken wings, beer, and wine for us to all share. As we ate, Sabrina told us she got lost at the top of the mountain and saw triangles on her map and assumed they were campsites. So she kept going up and climbed even more on her own. She said she was terrified she'd have to spend the night up there as the sun was going down. She ended up having to backtrack down the way she came. Eventually, she found a restaurant that helped her call a cab to get her to the monastery. She said she had never done something so terrifying. We laughed about it all at dinner and were so grateful we were all alive. Soon, Leonie, another German girl, and Tim joined us at the table under the umbrella and ate some of our potatoes. We walked together to the monastery. At this point, it was 9:30 and the kitchen closed at 10. Sabrina wanted to make rice, vegetables, and fried goat cheese zucchini. Everyone started helping her cut up veggies, and this other older gentleman who was a German guy helped her cut cheese. Leonie poured each of us a glass of wine. The nuns came over once to hand kitchen towels to Tim for cleaning and said they needed to clean up. Tim said we'd hurry up, eat, and clean. While they were cooking, I grabbed my Tupperware to pack up some pasta for the Germans' meal since they said they were going to toss it. I knew Ian could eat it for lunch the next day. When the food was done, we sat and ate at the table. Then a nun came over looking upset and said in Spanish, we needed to clean up and go to sleep now. We cleaned up quickly. Ian and I washed dishes, and Sabrina and Tim and Leonie left to go to a hotel where Leonie was staying. We said bye and that we'd probably see them at the 9 o'clock ferry ride in the morning to head towards Güemes, the next city we were staying at. Then we got ready for bed and went to our separate areas. I was so grateful to find a wool blanket to put over my liner since it was chilly in the church. I set my alarm for 6 a.m. and fell asleep. Total miles were 16 plus and climbing up mountains. So that was one of my journal entries for you to have an idea of what it was like. There is no like climbing on the Camino de Santiago. There should not be rock climbing without being attached. Like there is no rock climbing. But we ended up taking this route that there was really no option and we were so far up. And anyways, it was the scariest day for me. Like I was so terrified and shaking. It was so steep. It was just terrifying. I thought I might die that day. So I thought I would share that with you and what happened. There's so many other adventures. But anyways, I want you to get an idea of what happened. And everyone's Camino is different. Like obviously you're not meant to climb up the mountains, but people all have these stories from the things that they've experienced. And that's what's cool. It's like when you do a sabbatical and you take yourself out of your normal environment, you're going to have amazing stories to tell. You're going to learn a lot about yourself. And that was the whole point of this episode, was to kind of just shine a light on different kinds of sabbaticals and get you thinking about maybe if you want to do one at some point or you got another adventure to plan. All right, guys, have an awesome day, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.